Valley wear. I'll be gad.
Yeah, Michelle!
Morning, I'm Michelle, I'm an addict. I don't know why I brought these up here. Yeah, I don't know how I'm gonna do it, except for I'll start, you know. I was just starting from the beginning, you know. I was born a poor white girl on the east side of Miami. No, you guys, that's not true. No, I was born in Miami. But I don't know what side I was born on. I left there when I was 5, came here. I'm a recovering Catholic. I always love when people share. When that guy on Friday shared that, I started busting up. Come from a family of 5, and it was rough. You know, I had I'm the oldest of 5, and I had an alcoholic father and a control freak mother. So I got the skills to come here, you know, is what I always used to say right from there. My dad, at 5 years clean, shot himself in the head over alcoholism because there wasn't enough beer to take it down anymore, whatever he was drinking. And on the other hand, I got to be with my mom because I was 10 years clean and she got pancreatic cancer, which back in the day, you didn't live too long. It was 6 weeks. And I left my family of 5 kids and went and lived with her until she passed. That's so funny. Why would I say that? And like many of us, I think I grew up here. My clean date's 3/22/88. And whenever I say that, I get so happy because I have so many women. I think about 15 women that are here in the San Fernando Valley that are all got clean in 88. So when I had 5 years clean, I noticed there was a bunch of us. I think there was 15 then. And 11 of us got together at the Odyssey restaurant, and we made it a pact that every 5 years we would all get together no matter where we were at. And that continued up until we got probably about 15 years, and we decided, screw the Odyssey, let's do something big. Let's go rent a house in another state and spend the weekend together.
Yeah.
So we start doing that. It's been such a blast. I am so, so blessed in this fellowship. I always think it's important. I do it at least once a week because there's sometimes when life gets me down or, hey, I even might want to use. And I play the tape. I learned that a long time ago. I play the tape and I do the other thing that I learned. You tell somebody. If you don't tell it in a meeting, tell another human being. And another human being like us, another human being, you know. Not my 5-year-old, my 5-year-old grandson. Somebody used to share that they told their grandson everything. I'm like, oh, that's messed up. Tell your 5-year-old grandson you want to use. It's always hard for me to start. The last using was, I had a frickin' 4-bedroom house in Granada Hills, a camper and truck in the front driveway, and 2 other cars, a pool in the back, and I was the most miserable person you ever have seen. And one day, I always call him Save Some, my first husband, used to frickin' always say to me, hey, don't use it all up, man. Let's save some. What the frick are you talking about, I used to say. We ain't not saving shit. We're doing all this up and you're going back out to get more. And he'd still say it. So one day I just had enough of him saying something. We were on the phone, I was waiting for him to come home. I was Joseph, I knew he had had some stuff. And I said, you know what, that's it. I'm packing a bag, I'm leaving as soon as he comes in the door. So I packed a bag And when he was coming up the walk, I said goodbye to my 2 and 3 year old and I left. And I got into a Honda Civic and decided I was going to spend the rest of my life there. And I went a whole whopping 2 blocks from my house and parked in this church parking lot where I lived for the next 4 days. And don't you know it, the men stopped coming around, the drugs were gone, and I was left with Michelle, which was really, really scary in those days. Yeah, I had nothing to take up my time. Like, you know, the kid, I was sitting in a freaking Honda, sweating my ass off. I'll never forget that. And so I decided to commit suicide again, which was something I like to do between the ages of 18 and 28. And obviously, as I stand here, you know I didn't do it too well. I even jumped off a 2-story building, and it didn't do it. I jumped off a bridge into a wash. God is just good to me. And I kept saying to myself, all right, God, then what do I do? So I'm traveling along the 118, and I decide I'm going to just rip into this center divider at 90 miles an hour with my Honda, and that should accordionize everything, and, you know, I should be dead. And as soon as I went to go turn the wheel, my kid showed up on the dashboard, clear as hell. It was so weird. I'd like to think that I had some really good drugs in me, that's why that showed up. But I have a feeling it was part of my higher powers thing. And they just were screaming, no mommy, no mommy, no mommy, over again. So my steering wheel went the other way. I almost caused an accident on the 118. And I pulled over and I started slamming my head against the steering wheel. Going like, then what do I do? What do I do, God? What do I do? I had no idea about Narcotics Anonymous. I knew AA. My dad went there, still came home and beat us all up after having alcohol. So I wasn't sure if that would work for me. And so then I drove myself. It's like this voice came in and said, drive yourself to the hospital down the street. So I drove myself to the hospital. I didn't go in the ER, and I didn't even walk in the front door. It just said to go to the building across the way. I swear to God, I have such a great higher power. And so I pulled in there. Sure enough, it's a chemical dependency place. And I had no idea it was there. And I walked in, and I said, I have a problem. I'm wondering if anybody here can help me. And the guy said, yeah, come on in, let's see what we can do. And we talked, and they did the whole admission thing. And then the guy said, you know what? I want you to do something for me. I want you to go in the back. I want you to take off all your clothes in that room and look at yourself in the mirror. And I heard, I want you to go in there, take all your clothes off, and come back out. So that's what I did. I went in, took all my clothes out, and came back out to him. I've never had, I don't know, my mom did a great job as far as not having body issues. And he's like, whoa, when I came out, no, you're supposed to look at yourself. I don't want to look at you. So he's like, go back into the room. So I went back into the room, and that's what he said. He said, look in the mirror, as I was going back in there. I hadn't looked at myself in a long time, and oh my God, I'll never forget seeing all my ribs. And I freaked out when I came out. I said, well, what the frick happened to my tits? They were actually concave, like everything. I could put oranges up here. It was so nasty. And I looked at my, who cares about what you look like when you're freaking using? And so I went to a treatment center from there, spent a beautiful 30 days. I so wanted to stay there. And they kept urging me to go home. The only thing that they did great for me in that treatment center was they took us to meetings every day. You know, I got to say, I came into this room yesterday and it was so butt-ass cold. I said, I'm wearing this sweater so I don't freeze. And now I'm sweating like a dog. Pass me my purse. So, thank you. No, not
that. Was it napkins?
Exactly. Okay, so sorry about that, tape people. So I got home, and wouldn't you know it, those damn kids of mine pressed my buttons. Oh, thank you. And I went automatically to where I used to go. This drawer that I kept in the back of the inside of a drawer. Guess what was there? Everything that I told the idiot to take, let's save some and put away. I told him, please put it all away. And then that made me think, well, if he didn't do this stash place, then he might have not done the other one. So here I'm sitting with all this freaking shit in my hands and not wanting to use, but oh. I called. In those days, we didn't have cell phones. So when I went to meetings, we were told to get people's numbers, and I used to put them on little pieces of paper, like I'd rip, you know. So I had all these tiny pieces of paper in the drawer next to me. I'd come home, and I'd pull out the little drawer next to my bed, and I'd throw it in there. And it wasn't till then that I finally picked one of those numbers up and tried to call. And, you know, they said, call the women, call the women. Okay, so I started calling the women, but the women weren't answering. So I ended up calling the guy. He saved my soul. He said, do you have anybody in your family who's still using? I said, yeah. He goes, you call them right away and tell them what you have. I'm sure they'll be there in 30 seconds. He was right. They took like less than a minute to be there. So they came and they took everything from me, my brother. And then he said, you know, obviously, get to a meeting that night. And that's what I did. I lived in meetings my first year. For me, my obsession to use didn't go away. It didn't go away very quickly. And at 6 months clean, I wanted to commit suicide again. Of course, what I did in those 6 months was I went to SA, MA, PA, GA. I was going to all the A's. Didn't matter. CA. And the other thing I was doing was my behavior. My behavior was, you know, screw. Thank God I screwed a lot of people in AA and CA. So they're not, I didn't screw anybody in NA. So I don't have to look at them every time I come to this convention. And like I said, I had the husband at home and the two kids, and here I am. At 6 months, I was having my second abortion, and I couldn't live with myself. And the only thing that saved me that night was I went to a meeting. It was my home group meeting that I called the home group. I had like six home groups. I went in and told the lady next to me when I went in, I said, I'm going to commit suicide tonight. I just want someone to know. And she says, what? I said, you heard me. So she took me out, and that's why I always like to share. She really turned me on to the first step and why I chose Narcotics Anonymous, because she said, I've been watching you, Michelle. I had no idea who this lady was. And you're going crazy. You're running around. You're not getting any fellowship that's going to love you. And you're not letting, most importantly, you're not letting anybody get to know you if you're running around to all these fellowships. So she said, please do me a favor, pick a fellowship. I suggest Narcotics Anonymous for you. We don't deal in one disease, and you have a lot of different diseases going on in your life. So I suggest we do. Go to Narcotics Anonymous meetings for 90 days, and I want you to pick a home group. And you go there no matter what happens. And that's what I did. It changed my life. And I've been going to Narcotics. I had the home group for 17 years, and it was a great home group. So I got the powerlessness and how my life is unmanageable really quick. And I started working the steps, and to go through this quick, I worked 1, 2, and 3. And then I told that sponsor, you know, you're not working out for me anymore. I'm going to need to go and find somebody else. And then I got another sponsor, and I worked 1, 2, and 3 with her. And then I said, you know what? I don't like your hair color. I think I'm going to go, and I'm going to get another sponsor. And then I worked another sponsor, and I worked 1, 2, and 3. And I said, you know, I'm sorry, but it just seems like you don't have any time for me. And she went, how long you been doing this? And I went, doing what? She says, how long have you been working 1, 2, and 3 and then switching sponsors so you don't have to do the 4th step? And I went, that is not what I'm doing. Then we had an argument. I had the argument. She just went like that. And I fired her. And I'm laying in bed that night, and I'm running the whole conversation. And I went, oh, my God, she's freaking right. I didn't even know I was doing it. So I called her back up probably 11 o'clock to ask her to please be my sponsor. I love this woman. And, of course, she said yes, and we started working the steps. And I was so grateful for those 1, 2, and 3, though. Even though I was just working them on paper, I really think that I started instilling them in my life. And I say that because I had a 3-year-old that was about to turn 4, and I come home late one night from being out doing coffee all night, and my husband at the time, let's save some, says, Megan's really sick, and so why don't you sleep with her, and then I'll go on the couch. I said, all right. I woke up like an hour later with her flipping like a freaking fish next to me. I've never seen anything like it. And I felt that she was really, really hot. So I said, let's go to the emergency. So we went to the emergency, and she had 107.3 temperature. And they said meningitis was going around, and there was 3 other kids in the pediatric unit. So they said, you know, go out and sit down, we'll do some stuff, and we'll come out. And that was not me. I never went and sat down. I never wanted to leave the side of my kid if they were sick. And I actually said okay to these people. And I went and sat down and waited for them to come out. I didn't get obnoxious and bang on the walls like I usually do. Like, man, it's my kid. Because I was definitely that kind of mother. They came out and told me that she had that, and that they're going to do a spinal tap. And so I wasn't sure about what spinal meningitis was, and they started telling me, well, if she does come out of it, you know, she could be blind, she could not maybe walk. There's so many, elements to it that you don't know. And you know what came to me right away? I turned around after that doctor said that. I went out those emergency doors, and I got on my knees, which I hadn't done in a long time. And I took the first 3 steps. I said, all right, God, I get powerlessness because I can't freaking control this thing. And even if she makes my life so unmanageable, really, this is what I said, with all the things that she said, I know you can restore me to sanity, and I know you're going to give me everything I need to help her. And then I made a decision to not only turn my will and life over, but turn hers and give her to God, because there's nothing I can do now except for give her to God. We spent the next 3 days in that hospital. Within 24 hours, almost 55 people were in that freaking lobby from my home group asking what they can do. I was a smoker then, so some people that really don't know who is close would go and sit with her while I took, had a cigarette. And it was crazy. When that got all done, and shortly afterwards I left Let's Save Some, I really, really got the power of Narcotics Anonymous through that. And it was just freaking awesome. When I worked my 4th and 5th step, by that time, this girl who didn't want any children, I had no idea about DHSFC. Now, what is that place called? Yeah, you guys know what I'm talking about. Took your children away, or I would have tried to have that happen earlier in my life. I'm not kidding. I woke up after I got clean, and I said, why do I have a freaking 2- and 3-year-old? Where did they come from? I barely was there, here. And here, I was barely there. I don't even remember those parts of their lives. I was so freaking drugged out. I worked 4 and 5. But the only way I could do it was to leave home, and I went to a motel and spent 3 days doing like 72 pieces of paper that I flushed everything out, everything that I can think of from when I was this high till now. And I, oh my God, it was so great because I felt it down the way, down the road a little, that I didn't have this baggage that I was carrying on me all the time. You heard the other Michelle say about 6 and 7, and like her, I sat in those two steps for a long time. And that was part of my sponsor's thing. And you know what was really cool? She was from this group that, and bringing up the steps, and you usually work the steps the way your sponsor worked your steps, which is, you know, cool. I've gotten a couple of great things from a couple of sponsors that I've had. But hers was, we don't write about the 6th and 7th. Well, it wasn't that we don't write. We write some things down that we want to change, and we get it from our 4-step. So we did that together, and then you start practicing. And that's when I first really started, even though I had done the 1, 2, and 3, that's when I really first started realizing that this is what this is. You just freaking practice every day to be the best person you can be. And eliminating some of these character defects is going to do that. And it started working even better because I realized, you know what, if I have to practice this, this is probably about 2-3 years clean, that I really believed in my heart of hearts, I remember saying, oh my God, I'm going to be here for the freaking rest of my life. There's no way I'm going to be able to get this shit done in such a time, because my head said, you have to get through the steps and then your life happens. No, that's not how it worked. So I'm here for 8 and 9s. Jeez, that was loud. And I think, I think it was my sponsor, I think it was a lot of things, that I had done a really thorough 4-step and had a great 5th step. Oh yeah, I meant to say, I had done such a thorough 4-step that we spent 8 hours doing it, and I did 4 hours on one night, and my sponsor says, I can't go any. You gotta go home and we'll come back. And then I did another 4 hours with the rest of the steps. So we used to tease each other about that a long time ago. She's now in Albuquerque, so I don't get to see her too much. So we're at 9, 8. Sorry, 8. And so I made that list, and I got a lot of it from my 4-step. Sorry. And I went to her, and I'll never forget her saying, you forgot somebody. I go, well, who'd I forget? And she goes, you, Michelle. You should have been the first one at the top of this thing. And, oh my God, here I'm thinking I'm getting it. And she comes up with that, and I was like, that blew my mind when she said that. Of course, I'm gonna have to forgive me before I forgive anybody else. I'm gonna have to let go of the shit that I did to other people before I let anybody else is gonna get it from me. And she sent me back and put myself on the top of the list, rewrite the list and put myself on there. Ridiculous, I'll just put it on the top of it. No, go and rewrite the list. There's such a value for me in writing, and I think she got that. When I write things down, and then most of the time I'll share it with somebody else, even if it's a sponsee, because like I said, my sponsor's in Albuquerque. I utilize a lot of women here. It's one of the 88 group or something. I'll say I went through this week, and I just want to share what I wrote. Making that list was hard. Now, let's save some came up on that list, of course. And there was, he was one of the people that I couldn't make amends to because it was going to do more damage than it was going to be helpful for either one of us. And that was a trippy thing to experience. So her suggestion in that was that I make living amends to my kids through the fact that of what they've been through. You know, they lost a dad when they were 12 and 13. Unbeknownst to me, I guess he started using pretty bad. And we got a call 10 years later when they were 22 and 23 from their aunts and uncles, I guess, and that they had to come claim the body because they're the next of kin. And they hadn't seen this man in, like I said, 10 years or something. So they went and I went and did that with them. And thank God I was there. You know, all these little things like that that happen throughout your life and you say, thank God for Narcotics Anonymous. For without it, I would not be there. I'd be still freaking out using. And here I am once again here for a big moment in my kid's life. So the rest of the list came pretty easy. And then some people I don't know where they were. So I did probably amends, my ninth step, for years I kept people and they were in here. So I knew that if I ran into somebody in Oxnard, I think it was, yeah. I didn't know they had moved up to Ventura. And just did a spontaneous, of course I called my sponsor first and then did a ninth step with them. And that was a nice ninth step. You know, that talks about in the basic text about the fear of being told that, you know, they're not gonna accept your, you know, amends. And that was a big one with this guy. I'll never forget that because it's one I didn't want to do and it just appeared in front of me and it was meant to be. And by this time I had such a freaking great higher power. I really thought I had just this, and I did have this awesome higher power that I could reach out to. Help me out with making amends. Like I said, with my kids, it was living amends. I'm still doing that to this day and trying to be there for things that they didn't get when they were kids or growing up. And that doesn't always mean, it doesn't for me mean a material shit, you know? I'm not handing out $100 bills and shit to them because I feel so bad that we didn't have money or stuff. No, I'm giving them my time, and when they call, I come, even if it means I can't go to a meeting that night. I told them I told myself that that's what I was going to do, and that's what I continue to do. And they're 40 and 37. So, I couldn't have done any of that shit without a higher power. I had that sponsor that I had was very, very awesome. And I'll never forget when I was doing step two with her again, she said, you know, you need to start meditating. And I said, why? I'm not on the 11th step. Let's wait till the 11th. She says, no, you should really start trying to meditate now. Because she was a big meditator. So I was asking her about it one day and she was like, yeah, start now. And I started, but, you know, maybe I got in there once, twice a month and really sat and be quiet. This one wouldn't go off very, very often. It wouldn't shut off, I should say, very often. And so when it came to finding my meditation, and says somebody suggested an ashrama for me, and I went to this place, and it started. What it did for me, which was, you know, just try out things. It's so bizarre. It taught me how to sit still. And up until then, I hadn't ever sit still. I had never sat still in a freaking meeting. I would be up a couple of times. Even after stopping smoking, I had to get up, who's in the parking lot, having the outside meeting, come back, okay. Oh, maybe so-and-so went out. I'd go back. I was just a jittery. And I'll never forget, I was in that ashrama, it's like 6 months, and I was sitting there and I didn't do this, which I did a lot in a meeting, just shaking my foot, or I'd do this. And I'd have people sit with me in meetings and go, Michelle, come. All the time, Michelle, stop. And I stopped doing that. And I was just, if I can do that, maybe I can shut this off for a couple of minutes. Just a couple of minutes, just please. And that started to happen as I stayed there. And, you know, over the next 10 years, man, I got some good stuff out of that. And learning how to be quiet, learning how to be still. And I now attend almost pretty regularly a Tuesday night meditation that we do that is really not Narcotics Anonymous, but most of us in there are from Narcotics Anonymous. And if you want to join, please come and ask me for that connection. I would love to give it to you. It's a great group. And I've gotten a lot out of that too. One last thing, if you haven't heard anything today, sometimes I don't know why, but I think I need to tell you about a home group. A home group's so important. I hope you all have one, and like you go there no matter what. It has saved my life throughout my wonderful 36 years here. Because those people know me. When I come in screwed up and I go, I'm fine, really, I'm fine. I don't know how they know, but they know. Michelle, come on, let's go and talk. And always helps me leave wherever we are at better, because it happened at, last year. What's the football thing? Oh my God. Super Bowl. I walked into a big party last year and I was messed up. And shit, right away my two girlfriends that are my 88 buddies, they knew I was messed up, so we went out and talked. It was really, really, really cool. There's so many benefits to staying in Narcotics Anonymous. I thought, you know, I didn't want to come in and be that square person, but I've had more fun in Narcotics Anonymous than I had in all my using days. Of course, because you can't go further than your house usually, but, you know, I've been on the cruises that Narcotics Anonymous puts on. I'm actually now on that committee. I did 25 years here at the convention, and it was really, really beneficial for me doing the convention committee. I think it taught me a big thing. It taught me that what a control freak looks like is really sad. And I knew I was one, so when I got into doing the convention, I told myself, you're never gonna be a chair, and you're never gonna be a vice chair. You're gonna be the little, what do they say, the Indian instead of the chief? So that's what I did for 25 years. I won't go into that. But it really taught me, because I was able to look at some of these people that I love them, but it looks ugly when people get all anal retentive about something that doesn't mean anything. And I felt like I learned a lot about Michelle on that committee. And and if I didn't say too, I'm of service to, I don't know how I could have lasted in Narcotics Anonymous without being of service. And if I took every frickin' committee on and was you know, the secretary at six meetings. I could never give back what Narcotics Anonymous has given to me in this time, ever, ever, ever. So I stay and I remain teachable and I continue to meditate and ask my higher power to make me a better person than I am today, and I stay clean. And thank you for letting me share.
All right, let's thank Michelle again for sharing your experience and hope to those.